Hey guys, just a little disclaimer before the show starts. This episode does have quite a few violent images, violent scenes associated with it. This is not a story like Rendlesham Forest, like the Jersey Devil, where people got a little spooked, but in the end, no one actually got hurt, or no one living human got hurt, at least. Unfortunately, the story that we're going to tell you involves a loss of life on a massive scale. We're not going to get too gory into it. We're not going to, you know, revel in the blood and the guts and the gore. But the simple facts of the deaths and the killings themselves are quite disturbing. So keep that in mind. I wish I could tell you a specific timestamp to jump by, but it's pretty much just peppered throughout. So without further ado, here is The Beast of Gévaudan. Hello and welcome to the Not Alone podcast. I'm Sam Fredrickson.
And I'm Jason Moisoso.
Jason, what are we talking about? What are we doing today?
We are talking about the Beast of Gévaudan. No. Gévaudan.
Gévaudan.
French names.
So we're going to go ahead and apologize from the beginning. We just don't know how to pronounce half of these things. I did my best. We looked it up. My brother speaks French. I could have reached out to him. I didn't. I'm sorry, Ben. We are going to butcher a lot of names here, kind of like how the Beast butchered a lot of kids here.
And women.
And some men. But that's what we're talking about today, which is the Beast of Gévaudan. I'm pretty sure it's Gévaudan. Maybe Gévaudan.
Gévaudan?
Sure.
That sounds good.
The Notorious B.O.G. That's what we're going to call it.
Bog. There are marshes over there.
There are marshes. So we're going to go ahead and start with, what is Gévaudan? Jason, you want to take us through it?
So Gévaudan is a region in southern France.
Okay.
It's primarily home to peasant shepherds, for the most part. Cattle herders, sheep herders. Gévaudan also has, in its scenery, large mountain ranges and also some marshlands. And we're going to be going back to the 1700s for this story.
In ancient times, and I think this is really fascinating, in ancient times in the Gévaudan, a group called that's been referred to as the Menhir, inhabited the region, and they dotted the countryside with these great upright stones. The sites nowadays, and even kind of back then, were accepted to be tombs, but the locals associated them with the devil, fairies, giants, old archaic gods,
Paganism,
yeah. As Jason said, Gévaudan is a very rural region. By the 1700s,
very Catholic as well.
Very Catholic, but also very Protestant. It was kind of like a hideout for Protestants during this time. But we'll get into that. By the 1700s, 3/4 of all families residing there were herders of sheep or cattle. The people of Gévaudan itself were known for their skill in cloth making. I mean, it's just a fascinating area. It also, during like in more modern times in the Second World War, it was a great area for guerrilla fighting, resistance fighting.
Makes sense. Forest, hills, marshlands, mountains, yeah.
Easy place to hide, easy place to pick off some Nazis. The last thing we're going to say about it is Robert Louis Stevenson, the you know, famous author, Treasure Island, and I'm sure a lot of other things, but mainly
Treasure Island.
he traveled there, and all that he could recall was the roaring blackness of the night and the bleak fields. He said that he was sure of nothing but the direction of the wind, which is just the perfect... It's just the perfect setup for this.
Endless abyss.
So it was in this area that between 1764 and 1767, probably the most famous, real life werewolf, monster, terror, whatever, came from. And it was... It will forever be the Beast of Gévaudan. Tell me about that, Jason.
Yeah,
tell me why I need to be terrified.
The Beast, well, you don't.
That's true.
That was almost 300 years ago, and we're okay now.
You know, this one's not like the Jersey Devil, where I know I'm separated by 3,000 miles, but I'm still terrified.
You're separated by 300 years.
Yeah.
And a few more miles.
And a few more miles. And I'm not scared of the Beast. I have had some weird dreams while researching this, but I'm not, like, terrified. Really, it's just tragic. Like,
absolutely. Because we're talking about a 3-year span,
mm-hmm.
from 1764 to 1767,
yep.
Where at minimum 90 deaths and 40 just injured, all the way up to 300 possible full right. casualties. Most of those being women and children.
Yeah. The book that we
dating back then must have been rough.
Oh, yeah. The book that we took the majority of this research from is called Beast, Werewolves, Serial Killers, and Man-Eaters, The Mystery of the Monsters of Gévaudan. In that, they chronicle, like, every known and accounted for victim of the Beast, death, and it was, like, 110 or 112. And, yeah, like Jason said, it's primarily young women and children, and that's where the strangeness of the Beast really starts. Unlike your typical wolf, like anybody who knows anything about wolves, is that A, they really don't attack humans that often,
yeah,
to begin
they're
with.
Skittish.
They are
they,
very
they
skittish.
They take a wide Earth. Range away from
yeah.
us. Yeah, absolutely.
But this animal thing, beast, whatever, it was physically seen ignoring, like, the wolf, or ignoring
the herd,
the
yeah.
sheep, ignoring the cattle, and focusing
specifically
on
targeting the
yeah,
humans,
the humans.
Individuals.
The very, very first sighting of the beast came 2 months before its first kill. The first kill was in June of 1764, so that would have been what? April? Yeah. April of 1764. A young woman was tending her cows when she saw a wolf the size of a large cow bearing down on her. Again, not a normal, like probably four times bigger than
not.
Your average wolf, and it was coming right for her. The cattle themselves actually, like, saved her.
Yeah, they started stampeding, essentially,
yeah.
and drove the wolf away, which, hoo-wee.
Yeah. Yeah, you
ain't
don't
that lucky.
You don't think of cows as being particularly brave animals?
No. I think something got them skittish and they just
yeah.
herded out the other way.
Just,
mob mentality to the other side of the field
happened,
or something.
It just happened to work
right.
out in a positive
absolutely.
Instead of a negative.
Which I'm sure people were probably very skeptical of her claim.
Right,
until
yeah.
June.
Until June. But what, like, her claim, though, doesn't even just stop there. It wasn't just that it was a large wolf the size of a cow. Her exact words was that it was a wolf the size of a cow who had the face of Satan. Okay. Its fur was a kind of reddish. It had a reddish tinge, but otherwise it was black fur. It was said to smell of evil. Like, I don't know what that smells like, but...
Well, I mean, I feel like a marsh would probably smell like evil.
That's true. Maybe just death and decomposition at the end of the
and
day.
Grossness. I mean, I had labs growing up, and you let them out of your sight for 30 seconds, they find
you're
a mud hole
smell
somewhere.
That evil.
And then, yes, it does not smell great.
No. Its ears were said to be pointed. It pointed to such an angle that it was the appearance of having, like, horns. It had a long snout like a greyhound, but its four frontmost fangs protruded from its mouth, coming, you know, down and up the sides, and its mouth was described as foaming almost consistently. So, you know, maybe
kind of reminds me of rabies.
Yeah, but even then, rabies doesn't give you supernatural size and strength.
Right, which... when you're scared, you see things. I mean,
oh, yeah.
It's very possible it's an extremely large wolf.
Right.
The size of a cow.
You have issues.
Yeah, I have issues with the size of a cow. I mean, I want dire wolves to be real.
Right,
as
we
much
all do.
As possible. I want my own ghost, but it's tough.
It is. Its claws were also 3 times the size of an adult man's hands. This is, like, taken from actual paw prints.
Yeah.
And then this one, the thing about the beast, so this, most of this is from, like I said, the account of that one shepherd girl who thankfully was not the first victim of the beast. The thing about it, though, is that so many people saw it and described it like completely differently. Like, there's,
yeah, that's,
it varies so much.
Mm-hmm. Most of the cases it has reddish fur with a black stripe down its back.
True.
Or I've also seen cases where it was spotted, like splotchy.
Some people described it as very, like, thick, and other people would describe it as almost like what's the word I'm thinking of, emaciated. Like, very,
lean.
Very, yeah, but lean, but to an extreme extent. Just very thin, you know, you can see, like, the ribs poking out and stuff like that. But one thing that is pretty much agreed upon is its eyes. The eyes were said to glint red and contain evil. So the red part pretty much confirmed throughout. Containing evil, again, what does that mean? Smells like death, contains evil. I think it just is talking about the malice of, like, what it's saying, that it doesn't seem to be your normal beast, your normal kind of animal primal thing. From the get-go, like, this is not just a wolf. I think that that's...
Yeah, I think no matter what, it's not going to be a normal explanation.
Yeah, yeah. You know, who knows what it is.
Especially because
we'll
it's riding solo. I mean, most wolves hunt in packs.
Yeah, they're pack hunters. They're very strong.
They've been outcasted
bonds.
For some reason.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's wolves are pack hunters.
Yeah,
they are families themselves. Seeing just one is incredibly rare.
Yeah, you don't. You know, there's a reason why the lone wolf is the stereotype in this and that, because it is unnormal. It's
right.
Unnatural. And finally, before we get into the nuts and bolts of this, we're going to give you a little bit of a spoiler. There were actually 2 beasts, supposedly. They killed the first one, and they were like, cool, the reign of terror is over. Wonderful. And then, unfortunately, a few months later...
Which was like a 60-kilogram wolf as well. It was
huge.
It was a big boy.
Yeah, it was a very large wolf. They were sure they were good to go, and then, of course, they weren't. More killings happened. But, all right, so now we're going to go ahead and actually get into the story of the wolf. So go ahead, take it away.
Yeah, so in June,
yep,
2 months following the first sighting, our very first victim, and her name is Jean Boulet?
I think it's Jean Boulet.
Okay, so it's going to be a rough one. And she was a herds girl. She was attacked by the wolf, her throat slashed.
Just torn open. And she was a young herds girl. She was like 10, maybe 11, I think.
Yeah, which, I mean, that being said, a 10, 11-year-old girl, it's a pretty easy target.
Oh, yeah. But...
As a predator goes. And also, one thing I do want to make absolutely known is that wolves and a lot of other large predators definitely go for throat kills first, because it is one of the quickest ways, and also is an easy way for them to essentially not get hurt.
Yeah, to neutralize very quickly.
It's a very, very fast way and a very clean way in order to make a kill for large predators. So, very common way, and this sort of attack is going to be prevalent throughout the entire 3 years.
And this is what kicks it off. You know, that other... the unnamed herds girl from 2 months earlier, thankfully she survived. And then this was the first kill of the beast. And it's actually interesting in her. So she was buried without having received her last rites. You know, the Catholic
Ooh, yeah.
Tradition of confession and blessing and all of that. because she was killed by a beast, unexpectedly. In like the notes, the priest or whoever would have administered it, it basically like had a part on the form where it's like, why didn't she receive her last rites? And it said killed by the ferocious beast, not a ferocious beast, but the, which is something that a lot of historians looking back are like, okay, so people knew. It's, yeah. This isn't just something that came out of nowhere. Like,
those first sightings that got spread around. We knew that there was something living in the hills.
Yep.
And then from her, we had three more young children die in August.
In August, just butchered. And a lot of these bodies are just being found. There's times when people see the wolf attack, for sure, but other times the bodies just show up or are stumbled upon the next day.
Right. Another thing that has been pretty well seen in most of the killings as well, and this does absolutely coincide with wolves, but a lot of their entrails get eaten out early on first, which that, again, is very, very similar to a wolf, even though I don't quite think it's a normal wolf kill.
Right. But it's still, it's following that pattern. It's
looking very similar to those kind of kills. Also, another good thing of note is that peasants in France were not allowed, by law, to own firearms.
Correct.
So,
wonder why. Maybe they didn't want an uprising. Uprising.
So keep that in mind as well. At most, they might have a spear, I guess. You know, maybe a knife. But that would be probably the highest end of
self-defense.
Yeah, self-defense that someone like this would be having on them at this time.
So the reports of the beast get back to, I guess, high command. They're making their way to the Palace of Versailles, and people are understandably upset. You have four kids in, like, 3 months killed. That's not a great thing to have happen for your area.
Right. And also, I mean, the local priest goes out and says that this is essentially God's work and that they need to repent.
Yeah, the Bishop of Mende, who, because of the way that it's structured, like, he's not just like this pious little priest guy. He's basically like the governor. If it was a state, he would be the governor of the state because
he holds a lot of political power in the area too.
And the guy who reports to him, Stephen LaFont, he tries to pen an order for the destruction of the beast, you know, putting basically out a public notice and kind of attaching a reward system to it. You know, we'll give you so many pounds.
Dead or alive.
He tells this to the bishop, and the bishop just, like, looks him in the eyes, and he's like, it is not a normal wolf. It is not a normal animal. This is an agent of divine wrath that has been sent by God to remind us that we are to live righteously. It is the true scourge of God. And it's like, oh, wow.
Which, I mean, we're talking about four kids' deaths by now.
Oh, yeah. Because this is back in the 1760s.
Incredibly easy thing to believe that, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's unnatural. It's not. Killing a kid is like, or the death of a child, I guess, is often hailed as like the worst thing that can be done. Like that one being, whether it's a man or a wolf or anything, it is like the supreme evil in a lot of things like werewolf mythos, skinwalker mythos, all of that. That's where that comes from. And so for it to be nothing but kids right off the bat, very much escalated from the normal pace of, you know, wolf killings and this and that, it got people freaked.
Yeah. And back in church.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The churches were overflowing. But it's in that month in August that the beasts kind of moves away from the countryside and tries to make its home among the people. There is the story of a local, she's referred to as a witch, but she's just a medicine woman. I guess this was like that sweet spot in history where being a witch didn't mean you were evil or whatever and had to be burned at the stake.
Isn't that like a Wiccan?
Yeah, I guess.
Like a white witch is a Wiccan.
That's probably what this would be like. It would be like your local
she
Wiccan.
She does healing things.
Yeah, exactly. She's a healer and all that. She is out picking herbs from her garden for her medicines and all that, and she's killed in her own garden. And this is when it starts to kind of encroach on the place where people are living, instead of just being like, you know, you used to be able to just say, don't go into the woods at night.
Right,
like,
right.
Don't stray too far away from home.
Don't
and
hurt
now,
your sheep.
Yeah, and now it's do not leave your home. It's almost...
Which I failed to look this up. Was mm-hmm. there actually, like, livestock killings as well?
Yes, yeah, there were your average livestock killings just dotted throughout.
Because, I mean, that's been pretty commonplace for that area,
oh,
because
yeah.
wolves absolutely lived in France, especially in that area
oh,
as
yeah.
well. So it's not like the townsfolk and the herders were unaware of wolves
right.
and had never made contact or really interacted with wolves
right.
before. They absolutely
They knew
did.
How to deal with
yes.
it. They knew how to keep their stuff safe. But it did. It went from, you know, don't venture out to don't even leave your home. Don't even go out to your own garden. And then things get weird. In September of 1764, there's a young boy of 12. His name is Claude Morines, who's killed by the beast. He and his family were naturalists. They, like everybody in the area, they were naturalists. They knew the outdoors. They enjoyed the outdoors. He was not necessarily hurting or anything. He was not working. He was just out enjoying the outdoors. And the weird thing about him is that in that book, the Beast book, the author seems to infer or posit that Cloud had been, like, plagued of dreams with this abnormally large wolf ever since he was, like, ever since he could dream. He would dream of this large, deformed wolf attacking him. Which is weird enough.
There.
Which is, yeah, weird enough for a premonition. But that wasn't the only weird thing about Claude. He was said to be a boy who saw, like, many things in the world. And one thing he saw, and it kind of actually harkens back to an earlier episode, he described seeing a abnormally round cloud traveling abnormally fast southward. At a certain point, it stopped.
Aliens.
It broke up into, like, five different pieces, shot out in different directions, and as it flew away, seemed to be pelting stones, which is kind of just like Lieutenant Colonel Halt, who saw the craft of Rendlesham
yep,
Forest,
lights.
You know, break apart and then drop molten metal, is what he described it as. But it's just bizarre. Another particularly brutal killing occurs in that same month. Magdalene Morris is found. You know, this is one of those where people didn't necessarily see it happen. But she's found, and her body is just torn apart. Her heart and lungs were ripped from her chest and, like, laying outside of her body. And one of her arms was just torn off and, like, thrown to the side. Yeah. It's
brutal.
Yeah.
It's absolutely brutal.
It's in October of that year as well that the beast, like, enters its berserker mode, or starts to enter its berserker mode. The weird thing about it is that its berserker mode lasts for, like, the next 2 years.
Yeah, it hones its skills, it seems
yes.
like.
It kills five people. There are 12 total attacks, you know, three per week, one killing per week, a little more. This is when the reward for its capture was actually raised to 200 livres, which is just the French word for pound. So
totally
I'm going to say pounds.
Livers.
No. I'll give you 200 livres.
I mean, that sounds like dinner for a
yeah.
while. I mean.
Well, and it would be, because 200 pounds would be the equivalent of a year's salary for, like, a day worker in that region. And then,
so not bad money.
No. And this is when they finally lift that law and say, hey,
they're permitting firearms
you
now.
Can own a gun, you can shoot your gun. I couldn't find, like, if in the initial outset, if they were like, you can only do it from this time until this time, or if it was kind of just like until the beast was dead. And in October as well is when the first decapitation happens.
Yep, there are a little bit enough there.
Yeah. There are 16 total decapitations that occur, documented decapitations that occur. Her body was found, and then 2 days later, her head was found.
Ugh.
And decapitation can definitely be caused by even a standard wolf, even a normal
wolf. Yes, yeah.
Like Jason was saying.
They're powerful enough.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I mean, they take down creatures like deer.
Oh, yeah.
A human neck is a lot weaker than that.
More fragile. Like Jason was saying, too, because, you know, they go for the neck first. That's their primary point of attack.
Oh, yeah. You break the neck, and then you cause enough lacerations for the creature to bleed out quickly.
Mm-hmm. And then if it is moved, or even sometimes when it's not moved, but particularly the reports and all of that I was reading is if it's moved by the neck.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's not at all uncommon for that decapitation.
And they don't particularly move their, I guess, attack from the attack area. Usually, right. if they make the kill there, they're going to just keep holding on and pulling it somewhere else.
Totally. Why don't you tell us about Chateau de la Baume?
Oh, yes. Okay. So, this is where Chateau de la Baume.
De la Baume.
French stuff in words and things. So this is where the beast was actually confronted
for the first time.
Yeah, by dozens of people, and it was actually fired upon as well by multiples. It's not just like one person out shooting. Mm-hmm. We had skilled riflemen there too.
Well, and the thing is that this is also the king. I don't know if it was king. It's King Louis XV. I don't know if it was him himself. Or if it was, you know, like the bishop or Stephen LaFont or someone. But somebody sanctioned a royal beast hunter named Jean-Baptiste Duhamel. I don't know. Jean-Baptiste Duhamel. He was a war hero, and he took with him a small army of over 50 dragoons, which do have heavy firepower. And they were part of the people who...
And... some of the best hunting dogs in France as well. But anyway,
so keep going.
Took
so the
fire.
Dracoons are there, the peasants are there, the, you know, royal beast master is there.
We're on a hunt.
We're hunting.
Getting this thing. And even though those shots were fired, and many seem to have landed, it just kept on going.
It did. It fell at first, and everyone was like, "Woo!
Wee! Yeah, we got it!" And, the reign of terror has ended.
High fives, and then it gets up.
It gets up, and just takes off.
Well, not yet. It gets up. It continues to charge. They shoot again. It goes down again. It gets back up, and then it goes off. It gets shot twice, and this happens, like, this exact interaction happens no less, from my research, no less than 6 different times, where it is shot twice, stumbles twice, gets up, and runs off, and the very next time it happens is the very next day.
After... All I can think is, man, the fur on this thing has to be...
thick.
Yeah, it has to be crazy.
Yeah. The very next day, the beast was spotted in Julien's, shot, fell, got up, shot again, ran off. So within like 24 hours, it is shot 4 times.
This is an incredible creature.
Yeah, it's unkillable. It wasn't, thankfully.
Yeah.
But, you know, the beast just continued. This
at some point
did
got
not...
shot in the eye as well, didn't it?
Yes, yeah, we'll go over that here in a minute. Terrifying. The beast just continued to kill, and this is when people lost it. Like, this is when people were like, we've tried to kill this thing.
Yep,
like,
this thing should be dead. Creature. This is something supernatural.
Yeah. It had been, that foundation had been laid by the Bishop of Mende. It had been laid by the fact that it was targeting women and children. But when people start shooting something and it doesn't die, that's a pretty good time to freak out. And that's what the entire Gévaudan province thought. So, yeah. Like, commerce was grinding to a halt. The only things that were doing well were the newspapers and the churches. Like, everything else was just done. And the reward for the capture of the beast...
Like, gunsmiths probably do pretty well right now,
true,
too.
That's true. The reward for the capture of the beast jumped to 4,000 pounds. So you've got 200 being one year's work. So that would be about 20 years of pay if you can kill this
beast. That almost gets you in retirement pretty easily.
One of my... True. One of my favorite stories is from this time as well. It, just to prove like how much the beast was just messing with people's heads. There was an account of one man, an extremely seasoned hunter. His name is left out, but an extremely seasoned hunter, big as a mountain, with a brand new hunting rifle, very powerful, out stalking the beast in the woods. But then he gets a sight of it. He sees it. He is paralyzed in fear. He drops his gun and runs away, literally crying. like, you can't buy that sort of publicity.
Right. And during these hunts as well, I mean, they were largely canceled as well due to snow and weather. And there is many accounts where it just kind of vanished in thin air as well, or lost into the marshes, things like that as well. It was,
people would report it going up in a poof of smoke, basically.
It did a really good job of getting out of trouble.
One of the most kind of heartening stories from this time, there are two especially that are just like, make it happen. And this is the first one of Jacques Portefeux, I think, and his merry group of...
Better than I know.
His merry group of 10-year-olds. They're all just... There's just these seven kids, like ages like 9 to 12 or something. They're walking around. They're playing in the countryside on the 12th of January.
Okay, where are their parents?
Right? Seriously. There is a beast. People are dead. What are you doing? But they're out in the countryside just playing around. The beast comes at them. So many times you hear just these heartbreaking stories of like this girl and her sister were out with the beast and the beast came for one of them and the other one had no choice but just to run and just leave to be them to be devoured. But these kids
didn't do that.
These kids had the bravery that you have as a child. I remember one time
before you learn that things can hurt you.
Exactly. One time as a kid, I like, and I'm not like exaggerating. This is, I've been back to this place. I was like climbing down. It wasn't a sheer cliff, but it was like an extremely steep slope. It was 20 feet off the ground. I fell. I cracked my head open on a rock. I felt no fear because I was 10 years old and I was like, I am invincible. And I was doing it so that I could see a turtle because I'd never seen a turtle before. And there was one at the bottom of the cliff. And
go to the zoo, man.
I know. Or the pet store. But that's
the pet store.
That's the kind of just pure, like, I can do it attitude.
Stupid kind of bravery.
Stupid bravery. Exactly. But the beast, like, got his mouth on one of them.
Yeah. He grabbed him.
Mm-hmm, and instead of being like, well,
see you later, buddy.
I guess he's dead.
he like stabbed it.
Yeah, Jacques stabbed the beast. All of the creatures like
oh, those little kids, children, pretty much creatures.
All of the kids are beating it with sticks and rocks, stabbing it. They have like little pikes that they carry with them because they're just adorable. And finally, it drops their friend and retreats. Jacques is honored in the court of King Louis XV. And was given like a premier education, given a military career, even though he's just a kid.
Yeah.
And he like rises to be a lieutenant in the king's army and then unfortunately is killed in a shooting accident in 1785.
Yeah. So, still really cool kid.
Oh, yeah. Super cool dude.
That was awesome. Just unfortunate undoing for him later on. Mm-hmm. But we also get a few more of these tales of heroism in facing this beast where some people just say no more.
Yeah, there's my absolute favorite. We're going to jump ahead here. My absolute favorite happens on August 11th of that year. And it is an occurrence between a young woman. She was around 19 or 20. Her name was Marie-Jeanne Vallée. she was in the service of the local clergy, like just performing her duty. She was going to look at, apparently there's like a tithe barn, like in churches now, obviously, to give your tithes, your 10%, you give money. Back then they gave crops, they gave animals and all of that. So she's going with her 16-year-old sister to the tithe barn, and the beast just flings from the underbrush. She brought a spear with her, and immediately...
Yeah, it went to attack her 16-year-old sister.
Yeah, immediately just impales it, like just shoves it in there 3 inches deep, and the beast, unlike a lot of other interactions where it just doesn't die or just doesn't stop and you really have to beat it down, the beast gets knocked down, gets up, and the weird thing about it is it
uses its paw to cover the wound.
The same way that, like, if you got stabbed, you would probably grab the area and, like, apply pressure to it and all that. The beast does the same thing, and then it cries, jumps in the river, and disappears. But she was like, people loved her.
Oh, and there's a statue of her, too.
There is, and it's stabbing an amazing statue. Which is
really cool.
I want to go and just, like, kneel before the statue. But yeah, people were just in awe of her. She was like hailed as an Amazon. She was hailed as the second Maid of Orleans, which is
she
Joan
shares
of Arc.
The title Joan of Arc.
Yeah, it people loved it. But you have your inspiring stories, and then you have your unsettling stories.
What are you leading into here?
So this is one, we're not even going to try to analyze it right now. I'm just going to give the account. So this story comes from January 15th, 1765. There's a man named Pierre Chateauneuf. His son is out tending sheep, herding, exploring, whatever his son is doing. He's out doing it, and he does not come back. And even though this is in the clutches of the beast time, like everybody knows the beast is out, he just cannot like let it lie and just be like, oh, he's fine, he'll come back tomorrow. So he goes out in the dead of night, and of course he finds his boy's body just savaged by the beast, just torn apart. He brings the child's body home and is just mourning it and kind of trying to prepare it and get it back to a respectable place, when he looks out the window and he sees the wolf. Not like he sees it on the countryside or yards away. He sees the wolf.
It's right there.
Standing on two legs, looking through his window. And he grabs his musket immediately, just grabs it off the wall and fires. The wolf ducks, and then it runs away on two legs. It bounds across the field the same way that a man would. He described it as if it had been a man in animal skin, because it looked like just a person running, but the person is a wolf.
Which makes us think werewolves.
Yeah.
Of course.
And kind of like we were saying earlier, that's not the only weird like thing about it. Other hunters noted, and one really well-known noted scholar of the time, an Andrew Lang, in his 1896 Animal Stories book, he claims that the hunters would pursue the beast, and right before they got to it, it would just like evaporate. It would just disappear from reality. Really, really scary stuff. So Jean-Baptiste Duhamel, though, failed really badly at capturing this beast. And he was in kind of a rocky position with the locals. The locals did not like him anyway. But kind of his final straw came when the head of the 12-year-old Marie-Jean Roussette was seen in the mouth of the beast. The beast was like,
oh man,
plodding away just with this girl, this child's head in its mouth. And Duhamel had just the best idea of 1765. Instead of trying to be respectful, kind, caring, anything to this girl and her family, he took her body and used it as bait.
Well, I mean,
this, it should be noted, this did not work.
Okay, then I mean,
so
I,
whatever you're about to say,
he tried
this
really
did not
hard.
Work.
I mean, it had some merit, I guess, but yeah, incredibly disrespectful, of course.
Yeah, and that was about
especially
it. That's
the family.
He was dismissed pretty much after that.
Yeah,
and replaced by the man who would kill the first beast.
Was believed to be the beast.
Yes, his name is Antoine. What was his full name? Francois Antoine.
Francois.
Oh, yeah.
Gosh. Okay.
Go ahead. So there's one last really impactful
Count.
Story.
Yeah.
It is not a hopeful story. I mean, it is in a way.
I mean, yes and no. It's again more bravery, which
bravery.
I think is definitely key in this area, at least in this set of time.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're in March, mid-March.
Okay.
The eyes of March. Hey, look at that. Right around now.
That was yesterday.
again, 1765, mother left home with her small boy, about 6 years old, and fought off the beast with her bare hands.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jean Jove, okay, was playing with her child, her three children, to be exact, outside when the beast went and attacked them. It took an interest in her six-year-old son, and she instructed her daughter and her infant sister to run into the house.
Mm-hmm.
And then she goes mama bear on the wolf. And
this...
actually, as the wolf takes off with the boy, she goes ahead and she starts to attack it as well.
Again, with just her bare hands.
Yeah, just bashing at its head with a rock that she found.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, the beast gets irritated enough to where it drops the boy.
So it drops the boy once, and it only drops the boy to attack her.
Right.
She is just, like, that's what's so, for this story... hurts me. Not only is like this baby boy getting killed, but like you just have to imagine his mother. She gets attacked by the beast after it drops the boy. She's slashed at, knocked down. It picks back up the boy.
Right, taking his prize.
Mm-hmm. And at that point she grabs the tail and just like you just have to imagine her grabbing the tail and then hand over hand climbing onto the beast and smashing it with this rock, just screaming, covered in blood. She is again thrown clear, slashed again, and she at this point is just, she can't get up. And she just knows that, like, this is it. Her baby's about to be taken away. But at the last minute, her two older sons are out hunting, herding, whatever. They come back, and immediately the dog, the family dog, always trust your dog, just runs and knocks the beast over, just attacking it, and then one of the brothers attack it too, and again they are stabbing it, piercing it. It's not impervious to it, but it is not like staying down, and finally it just says, this is, you know, there are better kids elsewhere, and just runs away. And Jean Jove was like awarded for her bravery. She was awarded £300 by the French royal court. But
unfortunately, her son did die 3 days later.
3 days later, so
due to injuries.
It's like a hollow victory.
Yeah.
And that really, to me, is one of the last notable just beast attacks.
Yeah, absolutely.
The next one, though, the next account, though, is the actual death of the first beast. So, like I said, there are two beasts, or theoretically, at least two beasts. And
right, because we're still in
1765. Yep.
Started in 64. We have a couple more years.
Yeah. This happens near the end of 65, September 20th. Like we were saying earlier, Francois Antoine, who was actually the royal gun bearer when the King of France would go out on hunts, he held the king's gun, and he was commissioned to hunt after everyone was like, get this Duhamel out of here. I don't want him anymore. He was just spent tireless times hunting, tracking, finally he's tracked the beast, and he's just basically sitting and waiting. He sees the beast coming. It's charging at him, and he fires with a shotgun that's meant for duck hunting. Just almost, not necessarily, but almost at point blank range. The gun was so powerful that he had to take like 2 steps back to stop from falling over.
And the, that's some kick.
Yeah.
That is some gunpowder.
The shot hit the beast in the right eye. It did not die. It got up. It went down.
It bled. Yeah.
It went down and it bled, which is like encouraging.
Sign. Yeah. Yeah. But hey, we're doing something.
It got back up. Blood was flowing from its eye socket. It could not see. It was in a rage, and it just continued its charge. Because it's an old-timey shotgun, this is not like a... Even now, shotguns are not...
Yeah, they have to...
Even now, shotguns are not like, you want a rapid fire? Take a shotgun. Like, they take time. But back then, it really took time. And he's like, this is over. He throws the shotgun, grabs his knife, and is just ready to fight to the death with this thing. It's upon him, and then one more shot rings out. He looks around, he sees his nephew, who had shot the beast. The beast went down, got back up, but then went down one last time.
And then that was finally it. It hit the ground.
After that, the corpse of the beast was sent to the Palace of Versailles. It was stuffed and put on display. Everything seemed okay. They actually were able to find the mate of the beast, which I don't know. Like, it could have just been another wolf, but... It could have
been a wolf and some pups.
Yeah, I mean, but they also found the pups. And so that makes me think that maybe, like, because it has this bizarre coloring, maybe, like, the pups shared the coloring, and so that's how they knew. And everything was cool. Like, and everything was okay.
I mean, this was such a battle and such a terror on these people that they actually... Antoine's... They actually have the beast shot and bloody dying on now their family crest.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So that makes such a mark on them and their family that they decide to put this on the family crest. And this is going to be a thing now. Yeah, now. Absolutely.
You know, that's who they are.
They killed the beast of Gévaudan.
They did kill that beast. They did kill that creature.
Yep, and it... Everything seems
everything
good
for
a bit.
Everything was totally great in Gévaudan. People could herd sheep again. People could have kids again.
Right.
But 72 days later...
The weight gets put back on.
Yep. 72 days later, a young 6-year-old boy is snatched by a ferocious animal, and a nearby boy attacks a great wolf with a spear until the wolf drops its prey and retreats.
Six just... Seems to be the lucky age.
Unlucky age, I would say.
Yeah, probably. I mean, that's fair.
I imagine that in this time they were not like super keen to be like, the beast is back. They probably like sat back and were like, okay, it's fine. It's just a normal
large wolf.
Yeah. The interesting thing is 72 days is by like a factor of 10 longer than any other time between beast attacks.
Yeah,
so
quite a span. Also, of note as well, the original beast that was killed, 60 kilograms, which is huge for a wolf.
How many kilograms to a pound?
I believe a kilogram is about 4 pounds.
Oh my goodness.
If I remember.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah,
oh,
this is a large
holy crap
creature.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's a big boy.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, so quite a wolf.
If I remember right.
Yeah. Well, let's not fact check.
Because I'm awful.
You're okay. So the boy is snatched and killed. Again, I guarantee you that they're like, it could maybe not be the wolf or the beast. It could be just a normal wolf. Like, we do live in the French countryside.
Right, and
there are wolves.
A 6-year-old boy is, I mean...
An unfortunately easy target.
Yeah, absolutely.
However, on the 21st of December, something happens that really drives out all doubt.
Another decapitation.
Another girl, an 11-year-old girl, is found decapitated And then on the 23rd, just 2 days later, a young girl is completely devoured with the only thing remaining.
Clothing and a hand?
Hands.
Oh, both of her hands.
Both of her hands.
Ain't that nice?
They couldn't find anything else. They knew who it was because child went missing, but that was it. And these are the things that they're like, okay, well, the beast is back. So they petition the king again, but the king's son had just died of consumption, which nowadays we call tuberculosis, and just could not be bothered. They're like, nope, we killed
him. They're like, yeah. Hey, we took care of that. That's all done.
Deal with it yourselves.
So that left...
And that's what they did.
Yeah, that left the citizens really playing for the Chastel mm-hmm. family to step in, which the Chastels are well-known wolf hunters.
Renowned, yeah. The interesting thing about them, and we'll get into this more here in a moment when we go over, like, theories, but they had previously been jailed during the time that that Antoine Francois was there because they had misled him. They were like, yeah, if you go through here, you're going to be totally fine. And it turns out that the place they were telling them to go through was a deep
marsh.
Sticky
yeah.
marsh,
yeah.
which is not great for horses or infantry or guns. And it actually ended with them being thrown into prison
for misleading them. Yeah.
Yeah. Until those forces left the area. Mm-hmm. But that's what happened. There's another fellow named Marquis de Aperture. He had been involved in the original hunt and vowed to slay the beast. So he and the Chastel family, which was father Jean and son Antoine, they kind of joined forces, and that was their full-time job. They just went out because at this point, I don't think there was really a reward for this one. The previous reward, we didn't say it. It jumped up to 4,000 pounds at one point, and then it jumped up to 10,000 pounds was the end result. So again, like that's what, 50
a
years?
Lot. A yeah. lot. I mean, yeah, for someone in this region, yes.
Yeah. Which you're not going to live to be 50. It's just not going to happen.
thank you.
No, not you. Like whoever got that award.
Right. I'm sure they spent it the way they wanted to.
But the... So, the other beast attacks are just, like, quote-unquote normal, you know, decapitations, getting eaten, all of that. The last notable thing about the Beast of Gévaudan is how the second beast dies.
Right, which, oddly enough, by silver.
Yes. So, tradition tells us, and part of this is tradition, part of this is absolutely true. And what's absolutely true is that one day in June 1767, Jean Chastel, his son Antoine, and the Marquis were hunting in the woods of Tenezayer. And that while hunting, they killed the beast. That is indisputable fact. However, the most common retelling of this story and the origin for so many of our modern day myths goes
for
like,
werewolves. Yeah, absolutely.
Goes like this. Chastel, the elder, went off to pray and study his scriptures in the woods. He was on the hunt. He knew that it was in this area, and there was nothing else to do but wait. And he thought, okay, if I just sit here, you know, I'm going to be an easy target for him. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to make ourselves an easy target. He prays to Mary Magdalene and is reading his scriptures when he looks up.
And the beast is bearing down on him.
Bearing down on him, but bearing down on him on two legs. Running at him as if he was a man, but he was a beast. And this comes into something that was said multiple times by people who saw the beast. It was a wolf, but it was not a wolf. The beast runs towards him. In the most badass move of 1767, he points his gun at it and says, "Beast, thou shalt kill no more," shoots it, hits it square in the chest, hitting the heart because in theory it's running on two legs.
Mm-hmm. And so hits breast it, exposed.
Yep. Hits it with a bullet that was melted down, formed, and sanctified from silver medals of Mary Magdalene, blessed by a local priest. And people, you'd be surprised how many people sit back and say, well, that was added later because that's the legend. This is the legend. This is where this comes from. Like, this is the first account of silver killing a werewolf, and silver bullets especially.
Mm-hmm.
This is why we believe that. But in any case...
Yeah, it became popular, modern culture mm-hmm. for werewolves to be taken down by a bullet. Silver bullet.
Yep. It gets hit in the heart. It falls, gets back up, but falls again, and it dies slowly. And the beast and the man just stare each other down until the very end. That is the end. The corpse from there was taken to the Palace of Versailles. It was not really preserved very long.
No, it was either actually destroyed or buried. In a secret location on Versailles mm-hmm. Gardens grounds.
Upon cutting open the beast for an autopsy, it was said that human remains were found to still be in its stomach.
Yummy.
And the official report came back that it was just a normal wolf, maybe a little big, maybe a little red, but a lot of the locals were like, mm-hmm. Nope.
I saw that one report was saying that it could have also been, again, like a wolf-dog hybrid,
mm-hmm.
that the skull had similar characteristics of yep. that.
But a lot of people thought that whatever it was that actually was found and killed was too terrible to, like, be put on display. And so
Which is probably why the hasty destruction or burial of the body.
There was an account of someone going to a...
I can definitely see Versailles wanting to kind of cover that up.
Oh, yeah.
Because they got the beast.
And they wanted it over. They wanted it over so bad. But there was an account of someone who visited, like, the French Museum of Natural History or something in, like, the mid to late 1800s. And he was like, hey, where's the beast of Gévaudan? He's like, why would you want to see that? It's just a wolf. So we destroyed it because there's nothing to see because it was just a wolf. And the guy was like, okay, sorry. But
a ton of speculation that it wasn't just the wolf as well. Yeah.
Whatever it was, like, that was the end of it. You had your occasional wolf killings in Gévaudan. The wolves of Gévaudan, like, unfortunately, were hunted to near extinction.
Yeah. Absolutely.
There's actually
a lot of France actually doesn't have very many wolves anymore.
There's actually kind of on like a heartening note for the wolves. There's like a conservatory of 100 wolves in what used to be Gévaudan that are just let to roam and just protected and not going to be killed.
Yeah, which I mean is good for the wolf population. Mm-hmm. Also, wolves were introduced into northern Italy
mm-hmm.
a few decades ago as well. And, wolf sightings have increased quite a lot in the southern France area now.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, wolves do spread around.
They rebound.
Yeah, absolutely.
So...
wolves have re-entered the population over there.
Correct. All right. So let's go over...
What was this?
And we're going to kind of rapid fire. We're getting a little low on time. But we're going to rapid fire through some of these, and then we're going to spend way too much time on others. So... Let's just count it off. You go first.
So, I actually kind of want to go from my take, if that's all right. I want to lead with that. So, okay. with most of the descriptions of the beast is very wolf-like, uh-huh. besides from being overly large. There's a couple key features that are a little odd. The neck seems to be increasingly well in size for most of them.
Okay.
So, a very strong neck, which coincides a lot with hyenas. And hyenas are a very kind of automatic, this could be it, because mm-hmm. also the aristocracy of France did essentially have their own zoos in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
they were known for importing exotic animals mm-hmm. from lions, which is another possible belief, to hyenas, to cheetahs, to panthers. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of beast that it could have been. Hyenas is kind of a dead no for me in a lot of ways, simply because most of the descriptions tell of a very long, strong tail.
Mm-hmm.
Hyenas don't. They have a short tail.
Yeah. But a lion does.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they have that kind of muscular, reddish fur.
Big appearance, but lions are really easy to see, especially just from the manes themselves.
Yeah, so...
I mean, well, if it's a male lion, then
that's a female, that's a
dead giveaway. The females were the hunters.
Yeah.
The females absolutely were. And they were known, again, to drag the prey back to the pride afterwards. So,
I read some body
movement.
I read a National Geographic article. We'll link to it in the show notes. And that was their conclusion, was that it was a lion that actually
A female lion?
Uh-huh.
Very possible.
So that's the more, like, normal theories.
Absolutely. One thing that kind of caught my eye, which is a little out there a bit, is actually a marsupial. It's a thylacine, which they actually went extinct in 1936.
Very recently.
So, okay. Yeah, very recent, but they're also known as the Tasmanian wolf, which had a very strong tail, and the body is actually very, very similar. Long snout, very strong neck.
Was it very large?
That's the only thing that throws it off, is that no, it's not a very big creature. Most cases, it got to about the size of a large dog.
Okay.
So then that's where more of a wolf
scale it back
might be.
Well, and so those are good theories. And those are, I mean, if we're going to just look at it straight up, probably the most likely theories. However, there are other ones, obviously. So other theories is that the beast was like a hybrid animal, a wolf dog, as opposed to just a wolf.
Which is kind of where I lean to myself now.
It was bred by some sort of maniac and trained to kill, and even potentially armored. Like, the use of armoring dogs and wolves
is not unheard of.
It's actually extremely common to use wolves, or not wolves, sorry, dogs in war and battle.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Romans did it.
Yeah.
It's been around for thousands of years. And, I mean, if you are wanting to do this as, like, a hoax, I could see it being very easy to disguise some really hard leather armor with another layer of fur over the top to give
and that's
it extra protection and, well, to make it look
real,
rather demonic as well. Wow. I mean, crazy fur, absolutely, and be able to take a few shots.
And that's what another working theory is that, like I said, armored, not necessarily like plate mail, but, you know, just thick leather, boar skin, stuff like that. One interesting thing is the color of the beast. So
it seems to change.
It does seem to change, but there is a more consistent account of it being reddish.
Reddish, yeah, with a dark stripe on its back.
Jean Chastel was...
renowned wolf hunter.
Renowned wolf hunter, man of the hour, Jean Chastel, whose whole life, like, he has a monument. He is immortalized. Jean Chastel had an abnormally large, abnormally violent red mastiff. And the theory is...
And I align towards this theory. Go for it.
The theory is that his son, or him, chose to crossbreed that vicious, huge dog with a vicious, huge wolf and create a vicious, huge monster. So that's the base of the story. But then it goes from there. It's said that Antoine was, his son Antoine was suspected to be working on the behalf of a particularly sadistic nobleman.
Yeah, accounts in the area that kind of
wanted
revolution
as well. We're not even going to try to say his name.
Oh, yeah, it's crazy. It's just insane.
We'll try to link to it in
the
show notes.
I messed up. Get me done. Yeah. It's just going to be awful. That was loud.
What was that? Spooky.
A car horn.
We, just so you know, we record in our spare room. So, yeah. Insulation isn't always great. But back on track. So yeah, that it could have been working on behalf of that nobleman. It could have been working just on behalf of Antoine. The fact that the guys intentionally misled the original beast hunters, to such a point where that encounter ended with them threatening to be shot and then subsequently thrown in prison.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, why?
Yeah,
I mean, there are obviously a lot of motivations from the hatred of the royalty to wanting
again,
to do it yourself.
This is very just before the French Revolution as well. So, of course, again, peasants are very unhappy.
Yeah.
On the brink of starving to death.
Yep.
So this could be an act to create more resistance.
Ferment the revolution. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or it could just be getting your kicks, or struggling for those
twisted and more of using the creature as, your tool for serial killings.
You know,
is possible as well.
Mm-hmm. Antoine is mysterious in folklore. He kept to himself. He was said to have suffered from hyper trichotillia or something like that. He was extremely hairy, and he was not like a friendly, personable guy. So it is possible, and he's been maligned as such, and said like, well, this guy was weird, this guy was freaky, he probably did it. And that is definitely a theory. Like, that is a well-accepted theory that Jean and Antoine Chastel bred this thing, captured this thing, whatever, and set it loose. But that still, to me, doesn't explain necessarily everything. It explains a lot, for sure. But the weird thing is that when these victims are found, and we didn't really mention it because...
You also really want it to be a werewolf.
I do want it to be a werewolf, but that's not even what I think happened. We're going to talk about that because it's a great story. But the weird thing is that apart from the beast running on two legs or anything else that we're going to talk about here in a minute, there were just other disturbing things. There were reports of victims being found stripped of their clothes, as you would expect if attacked by a wolf. But the clothes were not in shreds.
Right, they're actually methodically...
neatly folded.
Yeah, which is...
next to them.
Weird.
Yep. There are... and this one... I don't know. I found it from different sources. Other sources said nothing. But at the end of the day, there were reports that some of the bodies of the victims showed signs of, like, sexual assault. And this is my favorite theory. This is what I believe is kind of an amalgamation where the beast was probably a hybrid, was probably armored, was trained by something or someone, but what he was trained by was like a serial killer / cannibal who would send the beast out to do its thing and then take advantage of that situation.
Right, which a well-trained domesticated dog...
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely easy to pick off certain targets.
Yeah, well,
That's the thing as well. I mean, again, wolves, normal wolves, mm-hmm. don't go near humans.
Yeah.
This one did.
This one loved it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was extremely smart about it, too.
Mm-hmm.
When outnumbered, it tried to carry off small children instead of actually being there and just ripping it apart.
Yeah.
So this was... absolutely a smart creature,
mm-hmm.
and could definitely show signs of being trained.
And the other thing that makes me go from there to take that leap from, oh, it's just a trained creature, to it's working in tandem with a human element, is that there was like a detailed examination beyond the fact that it was mostly women. Like, that's the primary gender that was killed, but mostly young women and children.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, killing kids, the most evil you can get, pretty much, is that generally accepted. But it was... so it broke the mold on that. But a detailed examination of the 16 decapitations that took place, it kind of introduces the idea that possibly half of them could be something more than an animal. Obviously, when an animal causes a decapitation, it's going to be messy, it's going to be... it's ripping, shredded, and tearing, yeah. and shredding. But when a man does a decapitation,
it could be clean.
It'll be more clean. And they found that half of them were definitely, you know, looked like an animal, looked like a beast did it. The other half were a little too clean, a little mm-hmm. too neat.
And to back that up, I mean, if you were a serial killer, of course, for your own self-preservation, women and children are an easier target mm-hmm. than a full-grown man.
Well, and you just think, I mean, serial killers... so often they are born from and feed off of like the hatred of women and sex and all of that. Like, that's
frustrations.
That's such a crucial part to the making of a serial killer. Yeah, and
maintain the same MO mm-hmm. for the most part.
Exactly. So it's entirely possible. And for me, that's what I choose to believe, because with that one, I have to ignore the least amount of information. If you take the entire information from the actual accounts, from the theories, from the it's running on two legs to its clothes are neatly folded, like, you can't find an actual real explanation other than werewolf. If you take everything in that to be 100% true, for me, I choose to ignore it running on two legs, and which that
for all the attacks as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, that sighting of being it running on two legs, one was, I mean, possibly it could have been, you know, a little bit more of a fabrication to right. incite the legend of the killing and the
right,
silver bullets.
Exactly.
The other one of him, of the gentleman actually seeing it in his window and mm-hmm. it running off on two legs. That one's a little bit tougher, anything. But yeah. I mean, absolutely. For myself as well, as yeah. I lean towards believing that too. Mm-hmm. And also, interesting enough, the sites of the killings, they tended to happen in similar locations,
mm-hmm.
Chronologically.
Okay.
And the weirdest thing as well is that they all happened in a more linear pattern as well, as if it was traveling in one direction or another.
Mm-hmm.
Wolves don't tend to really do that. They don't go in a linear way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was really interesting. And also, they started off fairly on the outskirts and then again came in closer.
Moved in.
The site that the second one was killed at was actually essentially in the Castell's backyard.
Yeah.
It was very close to where they lived. And that's an incredibly easy setup for them if they needed to just kill the creature quickly.
Mm-hmm. So the most reasonable, in my opinion, maybe not reasonable, but it makes sense to me. You lean to it too. Let's do the last theory, shall we? Werewolves.
I mean, yeah, black magic is a thing.
Yeah. So, and that's the thing, is that there's, like, reports, and this is where it's just too muddy to tell.
Satanic rituals.
You cannot tell whether or not the reports of these satanic rituals happening, these werewolf wolf sorcerers that supposedly lived in those woods, it is impossible to tell whether those came before or after the beast. But logic and reason dictates that they probably came after, you know. These attacks are happening, and then people are like, oh, I saw, you know, men in the woods in wolf masks, and,
I mean,
and they were, you know, sacrificing a child.
It's incredibly possible. Mm-hmm. I think it also comes down to the fact that it just depends on the settlers of that region.
Yeah.
Of course, we're talking probably mostly the Franks. Let's be honest. Frankish became France. But also, throughout history, Vikings would actually dress in wolf and bear pelts,
mm-hmm.
go out into the forest before battles, essentially hallucinate on shrooms.
Berserkers.
Boom. Mm-hmm. That's where, berserkers came from, is they're the guys dressed in bear pelts. Wolf pelts were a thing as well.
Yeah.
And that could, of course, be an easy way to kind of stem off the idea of wolfmen.
Totally.
That could have been more prevalent in that area as well, because again, a high population of wolves just in mm-hmm. general in that forest.
Totally. But there's still, I mean, and there's other things that are just also weird. One man who was a well-respected member of the community, in a deposition that he gave to a local judge, a magistrate, he like swears that he saw the beast perform a supernatural lunge, like jump dozens of feet in the air. And then he heard it say, like, heard from the mouth of the beast say, admit it, for an old man of 90 years, that was not a bad leap. As if, like, the wolf was giving itself a positive affirmation. Of course, there's the account of Chateauneuf. You have the death of the wolf as it sprints on two legs. However, another one, and again, we come back to Anton Chastel. A man claimed that he saw him bathing in a pond by the moonlight, and then when Antoine realized he was seen, he leapt from the water and in mid-leap transformed into the beast and charged the man. I don't know. I think that guy was probably making crap up. I'm just going to be honest.
And I mean, again, this is a time where everyone was freaking out and thinking it was a very supernatural
mass hallucination
thing.
And all that. But like we tried to say earlier, Antoine did suffer from trichosis.
He was a furry dude.
He had an excess of hair, and the author of the book speculates that really all he would have had to do is take off all of his clothes and put on a wolf mask, and he could probably pass for a wolf if he really wanted to.
So, yeah, if he was wearing a wolf pelt, which his dad definitely probably had a few lying around, he could freak some people out.
Yeah. There was another account, though, of a young boy who claimed to, as the wolf was, like, upon him, see, like, buttons underneath the wolf, as if the wolf was like wearing a vest. So I don't know if that leans more towards the werewolf theory or the armored dog theory or what.
It fits but, in way too much.
You know what? At the end of the day, we're not going to know. The beast is dead. It's buried. The attacks.
Or maybe it had young. Maybe there are offsprings in those forests. I'm kidding. Lord. Probably not. Don't go to France.
2 days before my birthday this year. On September 20th of 2017, it'll be 250 years since the day that the second beast was killed. And we just weren't there. We just can't know one way or the other.
Absolutely. I think, this was a point in history where record keeping was prevalent.
It was good, but it was still spotty.
Yeah, it was still spotty. And I mean, really, it was essentially writing down, like one of the town officials writing down what a witness saw or experienced. And I mean, again, it comes down to sometimes when we are afraid, when we have adrenaline pumping, we experience things not truly how they are. And I mean, we're looking at secondhand, thirdhand, fourhand accounts, really. So stories do change.
Yeah.
And needlessly to say, though, hundreds of deaths. And this was a real epidemic for France at that time.
You just have to remember that, like, while we went over some bizarre theories and happenings,
and there's always going to be speculations for it.
Yeah, but this is true. Like, that poor mother fought nearly to her death to save her son who was killed. Like, these poor young children were disemboweled, whether by wolf or man or both. Like, this happened.
It's and it's a vicious terrible and dark point in history.
But, you know, it's over. So,
and I mean, yeah, food for thought there.
Food for thought. Anyway.
The moral of this story, always have a dog with you.
That's true. Let's, they will help we're fight gonna make things that off. We're going to make that the moral. Dogs are good. Cows are good, too. Cows also will apparently fight wolves.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Which apparently, is dope.
That's pretty sweet. Just, I guess, I mean, Big Ben and a blue ox. Best of pals.
Paul Bunyan? No. Babe. No.
No. Who no, had Paul Bunyan and Babe. Babe was
Babe the blue ox.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I said who's Big Ben. Who's
Big Ben? That's a clock. You're an idiot.
Well, you woke me up early today.
That's true. All right, guys. Well, that's about it for this episode. Just like always, you know, thank you so much for listening. We're so blessed to have so many great listeners.
Absolutely. And, of course, make your own opinions of this tale.
Don't just let us tell you what happened.
It was a serial killer. Oh, you're a werewolf. Right. You make up your minds.
You can always find us on Twitter at Not Alone Pod. You can find us on Instagram at Not Alone Podcast. We have a Facebook page. We have our website, www.notalonepodcast.com. We have our Gmail account, notalonepodcast@gmail.com.
So if you have some sweet stories, send them there.
Please let us know. The interview we did with Lupe last episode was like one of my favorite episodes we've done. And I would love to just interview more people, family, friends, strangers, whatever, and get it onto the podcast. So please reach out, you know, rate us, review us in the iTunes store, subscribe to always stay up to date on when new episodes come out. And then there's one last thing I want to talk about. So on this episode, we used, like I said, we used a book called Beast. It's a mouthy title. Beasts, Werewolves, and Serial Killers, Beasts, Werewolves, Serial Killers, and Man-Eaters, Solving the Mysteries of the Monsters of the Gay Vodun. It's by Gustavo Sanchez Romero and S.R. Schlaub. What we're going to do with this book and also any other books we use from now on, we're going to go ahead and put a link in our show notes. if you want to buy the book because you like thought this was a compelling story or something, you want to know more, please do. We've set it up that if you go through our show notes or go through our website to get it, we'll get just like a tiny pittance of the price. And we're not like here to beg for money or anything like that. But if you're going to go ahead and buy the book anyway, just do it through that link. It'll be right in the show notes there. You know, I just wanted to be super honest with the listeners and not just like try to scam people or,
yeah, it helps us a bit.
Yeah, it does. You know, we don't, other than the initial investment for the website and the equipment, it's not too expensive, but we do have some monthly bills we have to pay for it. And honestly, if we can just get back that would be great. But you don't even have to do that to support us. Just love us. Just, you know, tell your friends about us, follow us on those sites, reach out with feedback, reach out with stories. We're so grateful to be your hosts. So thank you. Thank you all so much. Remember.
Oh, boy.
Whether.
Here we go again.
You are laying down in bed, ready to have a beautiful night's sleep, or out after dark in the wilderness of Gevaudan, we are not alone.